Thanks again for listening to the Park Hills Podcast. If you want more information on things we're doing, go to parkhillschurch.com or the Park Hills Church app. So I want to talk about creation with you, Pastor Alex.
Well, Jonathan and I already covered this a couple ago while you were gone. So
yeah,
I think we're done.
I want to really cover it now. No, I'm just kidding.
You didn't trust us enough with what we already did.
So. Oh, I didn't say that. That's not what I'm saying.
I heard.
I know, which is just delightful when people hear what they want to hear rather than what you said. So I'm thinking more about, you know, we just talked about God's generosity in creation, how his creative acts show his generosity. And I think part of what I want to dive into with you is one of the things that amazes me is how different every part of this planet is. And so I want to have just sort of this, whether you want to call it like a hippie walk or something with you, I want to just kind of walk through some of the things that blow us away about the earth and about what God has done that show us how generous he is. And so part of what I'm saying there is just let me give you a basic start and then we'll dive into this topic and go wherever we're going to go with it. Cause we've actually not prepped this one. We have no idea where this is about to go.
No idea.
So let's just imagine for a second that God had created the earth as black and white.
Sure.
There's no reason why he didn't need to do that. Like he could have very easily just done black and white and it just, the whole earth is just shades of black, white, gray. But he didn't. The fact that we have a spectrum of color, the fact that we have, you know, prisms can show us aspects of that. The fact that we have so many different colors that are out there, that alone is just something that tells me God is a generous God more than he needs to be.
Yeah. I want to push that even a step further.
Go.
We can only perceive a portion of that color spectrum. Like God could have created just the color perspective the color spectrum that we can see. But you know, what are those? There's like some mantis shrimp or something, some shrimp that can see ultraviolet. We just call it ultraviolet. To us, we say ultraviolet, you know, the sun. What that means is like, as we go down the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, indigo. Yeah, like
Roy G. Biv.
Yeah, as you get to the end of that, there are more colors that we just can't perceive. So we don't have names for them. So we just call them, they're more purple than purple. They're more violet than violet, so we'll just call them ultraviolet. What do they look like? We have no idea. And those wavelengths can be perceived by other creatures. God didn't have to create that. Isn't that amazing? God created so many colors that we can't even see, who knows, half of them, a quarter of them? We only see 10%? I don't know. That to me is the crazy creative genius of God.
Totally. And there's no saying that he's not seeing colors beyond that even. I'm looking forward to spending an eternity with him and learning everything I possibly can from this guy.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll be able to see those colors in heaven.
What does a transfigured body end up looking like? So, but I think about that. I think about the diversity even within our own species, the fact that humans come in all different shapes, sizes, colors. That's a beautiful thing. I think it's a wonderful thing that we can look and just say, man, God is a generous God. Look at how amazing he is that he allows us to look and be different than each other. We get to learn from each other, grow in that. You know, you go to the zoo, you see all the different kinds of animals, and that's just a representation of some of the animals in the world.
It's mostly just mammals.
Yeah.
At the zoo.
Yeah.
And a few, sometimes they have herpetariums. That's a thing. Go to the medicine herpetarium.
No, I know it is. I'm just thinking about the fact that someone's going to pick up a terrarium right now, and it's just funny to me. When you stop and you just think about snakes, bugs. You know, in the 1800s, bugs were the insect family was the – everyone knew that was the largest species as far as numbers and population in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have, you know, X amount of human beings at the time. You have X amount of mammals at the time. You have X amount of whatever. Every one of those families – was small in comparison to how many insects were alive. what's amazing is it wasn't until a little bit after that that we found out that actually fungi is the largest species on the earth. And then only recently we found out it actually – microorganisms are actually the largest number as far as even weight in the planet. Microorganisms make up more of the planet than we realize.
Yeah. I mean, just a quick Google search says that there are 10 quintillion – that's 18 – that's a 10 followed by 18 zeros – quintillion insects on the planet right now.
Yeah. And that's nothing compared to fungi, which is nothing compared to microorganisms. Yeah. Because even those insects are made up of microorganisms within them.
Yeah.
Just like your stomach and everything else, there are microorganisms living inside of you that allow you to do what you do. So just stop and consider the vastness and the beauty of how amazing God is, that he didn't just create a planet with just, you know, two things.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. I think of like ecosystems.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have mountains, rivers, streams, oceans, and everything in between to sustain all of this life.
Yeah.
And the ecosystems are so complex, like the how things decay, how things, you have tectonic plates pushing mountains up and spreading the seafloor and erosion, wearing them down. And it just moves all these like moving parts. And if you take away like a piece of it, the whole system goes down.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading a book interesting about the invention of the wheel, and it was talking about a lot of things are invented over time. They get like slowly better, but the wheel couldn't be invented that way. You had to have an axle and a wheel. You can't like incrementally get there. It's like, yeah, that's a lot of God's creation too. You can't like incrementally get there. That's why I believe in young earth, because I think incrementally you can't get there. You got to have the whole system working at once. Otherwise it all falls apart. And just the creative genius to make all of that happen.
Which, another way to say that, we're anti-evolution.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't believe that species can't adapt in some way and change a little bit here and there, right? Because, humans within 100 years, a part of the species can change pretty drastically based on where you live and that kind of thing. I mean,
right.
We're actually shorter than some of the pioneers that came over here in the 1800s, which is interesting. And then the Japanese people in the last century have grown something like 3 centimeters.
Oh, really?
As a people. Huh. It's just wild.
Yeah.
You just go, why is that? And you go, is it food? You know, is it something about Earth's gravitational pull? No, I'm kidding. It's not that. But I find it amazing that, so we do flex and move a little bit, but evolution doesn't make sense to me, like you just said, because the system can't change itself the way that people would like it to. And I know we'd probably have scientists that are like, well, actually, no, but these are some of the things that I trip up with when I start to dig a little further into some of these scientific theories and stuff. So at the end of the day, I think just stopping and thinking about that, the fact that God is so generous to us that he even creates things we can't see, and this planet is being held together by this thing that he created a long time ago, and it just moves and does its thing. It doesn't need extra movement, doesn't need extra things. It's just here, it's doing its thing, which is why, you know, I mentioned the deistic mindset in the sermon, how God just sort of wound it up and let it go. We can't buy into the deism idea because it doesn't make any sense, because God has obviously been active ever since. That comes up in sermon 2 specifically. But when you stop and just think about the fact that God gave us a planet that could run itself, that opens up this question then of, well, something we see in scripture where we have creation, and then we have a number of points in the scriptures where God decreates something.
Yeah. Yeah. So jump into that. What does it mean that God decreates?
So in Exodus, for example, the 10 plagues are almost a direct response to days of creation. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We don't need to get into the reasons necessarily, but there are a number of places in scripture where God uses language that says, I have made this, now I'm going to undo this thing, and it's going to be in direct opposition to what I created in the beginning. So decreation just means, think about it this way, if Genesis 1:1 and 2 is that the world was lacking order, wild and waste is right, some people have translated it that way, tohu vavohu, the idea that the world was formless and void. It lacked form and it had nothing in it. What God does in days 1 through 6 of creation is he gives it form, and he fills that space. So day one, two, and three all give form and order to something, and then days four, five, and six fill those things. So day one is the heavens, and then day four is the lights and the planets and everything else that goes along with it. Day two is the space between the waters, and then day five is filling the waters and filling the air, which is the other waters. Day three is dry land, and then day six, he fills that dry land and then creates humans out of that. So when you think about creation being creating form and then filling that space, decreation is removing the form or giving chaos and or eliminating the things that fill that space. Mm-hmm. So the firstborn for Egypt, for example, would be a form of decreation. You know, we could call it death or something, but it's bigger than that.
So decreation often comes about as punishment or justice?
Yes.
Not just God randomly saying, I want to take this apart.
Correct. It's never actually, in my mind, I don't know if you could think of a moment when it is just random. It is always as a response to something that they are doing. And often it's because they are not actually stewarding the creative thing that God gave them well. So because they're not using it well, they're not doing it the way that it should be done, God then says, I'm going to destroy this thing and you're not going to have it anymore.
Yeah. So is Babel then a decreation moment?
No, not entirely.
Well, there's chaos. Like you go from order to chaos. That's the opposite of creation.
So the reason why I'm saying no is because of what I'm about to say. If you compare the Egypt deconstruction of the 10 plagues, even God deconstructs or decreates Israel to some extent in the midst of their exile. So there's language used by the prophets of how God is going to do it, and it has a very dark, dynamic aspect to it that feels like decreation. The reason why I don't necessarily see Babel as a decreation event is because God doesn't strike them all dead in that moment. He also doesn't actually dismantle the Tower of Babel. There's nothing in the text that he actually, and it doesn't look like what the books show us. It doesn't, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever seen that painting from the Middle Ages where it's like columns and it's this big, huge circular thing. He doesn't actually dismantle the tower. There's nothing about in the text that says that. What he does is he scatters them. And the text says, because at this point they can do anything. So what I see happening there is actually God is just giving humans what they want, which is they don't want to. They want to make a name for themselves. So instead of letting them all make one name for themselves, they're now going to go make name for themselves in different lands and different regions. But the entire intention of that moment is for him to redeem them and bring them back, which is what Isaiah says at the end of Isaiah, that the nations will return and they will worship the king. And that's, I think, what's happening in Acts 2 with the giving of the gift of tongues. And then Paul's going to the Gentiles is actually... So it's not a full decreation event. It's more of just a scattering, but it is bringing chaos. You're absolutely right. Yeah. But it's not the full extent of the chaos that we see in other places. I think when I think of decreation, I'm thinking of not just the destruction of the form, but it's also the destruction of the things that fill that space. Mm-hmm. So whereas Exodus, you know, the 10 plagues are, fire's not supposed to fall out of the sky, and it does. Hail's not supposed to destroy every single plant and animal, but it does. The frogs are not supposed to fill every single space and even up to the bedroom kind of deal. There's so much going on that God's going, I'm going to give you a sign that I'm actually the one that created everything, and I'm going to decreate it. So I'm going to give chaos, and then I'm going to fill this with death. And by doing that, you're going to see that I'm not. I deserve all your praise, is I guess the way I would put it.
So would you consider then Babel a creation event because God created languages?
It's neither.
It is creation neutral.
Yeah.
Do you see any evidence of God creating again after the Genesis 1 account?
Yeah, you asked this right before the podcast, and I thought, thank you for that. Wait. That's a weird, it's a good question. Well, so clearly he creates something because Jesus is such a different, it's a different, he's a different thing, right? let me throw this out to you.
So he created Jesus. I want to get that on record.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But Jesus is the firstborn of the new creation.
Yeah.
So that phrase being used of him is clearly something. I'm not saying that he created Jesus, but I'm saying Jesus being made flesh is a new creation event.
Well, you could say that every individual is created not at the creation event of Genesis, sure. Right? You and I were not created on day one of the universe.
Well, so this is where I was going to go with you for a second. I think what's beautiful about the creation event in the first 6 days is it has potential to just go and go and go without any God doesn't need to be active or involved in it at all. It has the potential just to go on forever.
Oh, you mean like it could be set and just run itself?
Yes.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So when we read it is good, what the rabbis have said is good doesn't mean perfect. Good means it has potential to just go and go and go. So a tree is going to, in its life cycle, it's going to drop seeds. Those seeds are going to grow into other trees. When the tree dies, there's still some semblance of that tree is existing. So what God does in the creative event in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 is he creates a planet that, different than the deistic view, which is that God wound it up and let it go, mm-hmm. It is just dynamic and it has potential. It can go on and on. So every human, while it is a new creative act, so to speak, that creative act is not coming from Yahweh directly. Mm-hmm. It's more of us fulfilling the mandate that he gave us, which is go forth, be fruitful, and multiply.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, here's where I wanted to ask you is what's interesting is there's a number of points in Scripture where God does something new in a different way. So the creative motif that he brings to the Abraham-Sarah relationship and gives them a child, even though they don't deserve, they're too old to have one. I want to say they didn't deserve it. I think everybody, to some extent, would deserve one. But what God does is he steps in and creates there. So I almost see, this is where I was going to go with my question. I almost see a pattern of Genesis 1, creation, Genesis 11, the scattering of that creation, Genesis 12, creation, Genesis 50, moving to Egypt, and then all the way to the end of the Old Testament, Israel, now who has been created, is scattered to Babylon. What's really cool then is Jesus is the new creation, the third creative event, so to speak, and then his people aren't scattered. They're gathered completely together, and then the final war happens at the end of the Bible. I think that's a really clear narrative arc.
It's a good biblical theology of creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In which case, the end of time, even though the seals and the trumpets and everything are that's a good version of a decreation thing.
Yeah.
God's bringing chaos and death follows because he's unfilling what's been filled and he's bringing lack of structure to what has form. But the difference is God's people are gathered to him in that time and they're not scattered ever again.
Yeah.
So that's a book that's coming years from now, I think.
That you're going to write.
But I think if you stop and think that way, that's a different way of thinking about creation and decreation. And I think that's how I try to live in it is, so does God, okay, so back to your question, does God actually create new things? I don't know. I don't know if I would put it that way as much as he works within what he's already created.
Sure.
And does do creative acts.
Yeah. God displays his creativity. And that's just the nature of his character.
I agree.
Is to display his creativity.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to create new. Because, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. You know, I hear sometimes that God continues to create, and that can give you that older theory. You know, God created a long time ago, recreated at humanity, continues to create, gives you an older theory.
So, yes, I hear that. And when I think about it, and I could be totally wrong here. So we're sharing our opinions. This is just a podcast. Mm. You know, if you're an old earth person that's going to freak out at this, come talk to me. Let's have a chat. I'm totally fine with that. My pushback to that would be most people that I know that hold to an old earth idea do so because they look at the evidence before them and they're trying to find a way to make sense of the evidence and stick God into the equation. Mm-hmm. Versus let's start with God as the equation and then let's look at the evidence and find a way to make that make sense. Those are two very different approaches to the discussion. So with that said, I'm not saying God can't create new things. God can do whatever God wants to do. Has God created new things? That's a different question that I don't know that he has, at least since the creation. Will he do so again in the future? Possibly. You know, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. But those are very different questions in my mind. Does that help at all? Or
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would agree with you. I don't think God continues to create, and as a young earth theorist or whatever you want to call it, you know, I don't think that God created something millions or billions of years ago and then in a second creative act created humans. I think you can say that God doesn't create that way and still be consistent and say God displays his creative power throughout creation continually. Like, those two are not mutually exclusive.
The only problem with that is that the angels clearly already exist, because in the book of Job, it says that they celebrate when God does his creative act. So I think he clearly created something beforehand, and I don't know what to do with that. Does that make, you with me here?
Yeah.
So what Job says is, at the foundations of the earth, the sons of God celebrated. And there's no other way to read that than when we read Genesis 1 and 2, I think we often think of it as God is ex nihilo creating everything in that moment. And that just is a fancy word for out of nothing.
Yeah, from nothing.
Which I agree. Out of nothing, God created. That's what Genesis 1 and 2 tell us. I don't think there's any way around it. However, because there is an angelic host celebrating that act, tells me something already exists beforehand. So Salehammer says, for example, our idea of earth was created in Genesis 1 and 2, but there was something before it. And he would say that could be a 13 billion year old universe. I don't know what to do with that thought, but I'm like, that's worth thinking about.
Yeah. Or did the spiritual realm exist and the physical realm was created?
Is the spiritual realm the universe in a different way, and we experience it in the physical realm the way we do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard because we are both physical and spiritual beings, but.
And I think angels are too, to some extent. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to eat with Abraham.
So what is the nature? What is the nature of their physicality then?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm asking that like.
That's something that I don't think we can put our finger on completely.
Right.
But for example, in Revelation, when the angels are holding back the winds and then God releases that wind, it destroys parts of the planet. When the angels blow the trumpets, there's a physical aspect of what they're doing that leads to judgment. Could you make the case that they're blowing the trumpets in the spiritual realm and God does something in the physical realm? Sure. Or are the two more closely intertwined than we think they are? The angels in the Sodom and Gomorrah story, for example, have no problem pulling him back from the door. So they clearly have some physicality to them. The question is just, to what extent? And I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that angels are never physical. They can manifest, if I can use that word without all the garbage around it today.
I don't know that you can.
They can present themselves as physical, or they can.
All emails should be directed to alex.yunus@parkhillschurch.com.
if they can inhabit or create or make, or I don't know, have, because there are times when angels appear to humans.
Yes.
And so there's some sort of physicality to that, even if it's just light, like they don't have a perceivable body that could be touched, but it can be seen, so therefore it has to have light to it, and light is physical. So, yeah, and heard sound, it's not matter, but it is part of the physical world.
It's moving matter.
Yeah, it's vibration.
Yeah. Yeah, you got more than you bargained for there.
Okay, well, but, let's
step back from
what
it for
were
a second.
Talking about again?
Let's step back from it for a second, because you were asking the question of creation, and I'm saying, I don't know. The question you're asking is, did God do multiple creative acts? Right. It's clear that he's done at least two, because he created the spiritual realm and he creates what we call the physical realm. Mm-hmm. Those two things are at separate times in some regard. So, but I don't know what that means. So back to the real question, did God create multiple times? All we have is what the scriptures tell us. Mm-hmm. And we know of two there. But I would make the case that he has done creative acts within his creation. Maybe whether you want to look at it as allowed things that shouldn't make sense, they defy logic, right? Mm-hmm. So the Sarai and Abram birth of Isaac is so supernatural. Something new is being done there that God didn't do any time in the story before that. Now, that's not to say that he didn't ever do it before that. But at that moment, the story is telling us this is a new act that God is doing, which then is ironically repeated by Mary in the New Testament to some extent. Mm-hmm. But this time it's not a man and a woman. It is something supernatural happening.
Right.
All that to say, God's creation speaks of his generosity. The fact that we're even able to have this wide-ranging conversation shows us just how amazing and diverse this thing is. We could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
We probably shouldn't, for the sake of our own sanity and for everyone listening, because right now they're probably wondering if they should, you know, come to our offices and have a discussion with us.
I'm like going to get lost in my own thoughts here. Like, where am I? What am I doing? What creative act are we talking about this time?
But did God continue to create? The scriptures don't say that. So I'm going to take them at their word.
Yeah.
Does it mean he didn't? No, because he can do whatever he wants to do. But the scriptures don't spell that out for us. And God is incredibly generous in what he provides us. Any last thoughts that you would add to that?
No.
He's sitting here right now thinking about the angel thing. I've never thought about that.
That kind of blows me away.
I know. It's bothering you, I can tell.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. If you want to be bothered, come chat with us.